You're tuned in to the Health After 30 podcast, and it is not uncommon that weight management can be challenging, especially for women going through perimenopause. And today's episode is about sustainable and effective weight loss strategies for women.
Hey, I'm Alana Bonneman, naturopath and holistic nutritionist. This podcast is dedicated to reclaiming your health by harnessing yourself as your biggest asset. Get ready, because this is where we stand up for your body's ability to heal, go against outdated norms, and say yes to change. Creating true and lasting success, all from the inside out. Thank you so much for being here. This is the Health After 30 podcast, and let's get started.
Today, I'm joined with naturopath Kimberly Verbecker, and we are unpacking hormonal changes and weight shifts and distributions that are happening in our body when we go through perimenopause. Kimberly is a naturopathic practitioner with an expertise in regenerative medicine. So she focuses on aging well, but more importantly, she works to allow your body's natural ability to heal and thrive. And I think this is one of the most beautiful take-homes of today's episode, is that your body wants to thrive, and it's going to go through different changes, different seasons. This is completely normal. And our body reacting to that is also completely normal. But if we're in a place where we don't feel like we're necessarily thriving, there are certain basics that we can do to realign ourselves and allow our body to thrive. Kimberly takes a very matter-of-fact approach. She's just straight to the point and telling it how it is. And I appreciate that so much, because sometimes we just need to be told, these are the things that you need to do. And in this episode, she says it clearly. And I really, really enjoyed this conversation with her. I hope you do as well. Thank you so much for being here. I'm Alana Bonneman. And let's get into today's conversation with Kimberly. Welcome back to another episode of The Health After 30. I am joined once more with Kimberly Verbecker. We have already two episodes out there. We've got one on perimenopause. We've got one on longevity. And this third episode, we thought to talk about sustainable and effective weight loss for those women who are going through a transition, whether that's menopause, perimenopause, or just even, could I even say the perimenopause, you know, just before. We kind of want to uncover some different things, what's going on, what we need to understand, and how we can effectively let go of perhaps old habits and bring in a new way of how we can do things. So Kimberly, thank you so much again for being here.
Absolutely. I'm excited to talk about this with you. I feel like it's such a valuable topic for women kind of between our ages.
Yeah, exactly. And we talked about this briefly. It's kind of a catalyst that people want to make change on. It's like they see and feel how their body is, and something feels uncomfortable. So then they decide to make change, but it's not always understood what's going on under the surface. So correct. Do you want to maybe unpack some of the common misconceptions that we have when it comes to weight gain, weight distribution, and yeah, what we need to be focusing on there?
Yeah. So I think one of the things that I see anyway is a lot of women, you know, kind of moving from their mid-30s into their mid-40s and beyond, they're like, oh my gosh, I could always like cut calories and lose weight, or cut carbs and lose weight, and now I can't. Mm. What's going on? And you start to feel like your body's revolting against you, you know? Meanwhile, your body's just always trying to protect you. I try to encourage women to understand that, like, your body is help. It wants to help you. It wants to protect you. It wants to keep you healthy. So anything it's doing for you, not against you.
I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. So you have that energy, right? How we think about ourselves and how we think of our body, it's valuable. It's energy that we're putting into our cells every day. So I think we kind of see that happening. And then often women see the weight being distributed differently than they had previous in their life. A lot of women will say, oh, I've gained weight in my stomach, and trying to figure out how to get it off. A mistake I see a lot of women make is, I just don't eat until dinner.
Starving restriction. Yeah.
And I'm like,
that's a good one.
How's that working out? And they're like, well, And you look at them and they look so under muscled, right? They're skinny fat. Their body fat has increased. They might fit in the same clothes, but now they're already less healthy and they're just in their 40s or 50s. Mm-hmm. And they have less muscle, so they burn less calories. Right? So it becomes this vicious cycle that they really don't even understand the long-term detriment that they're doing by just not eating.
Mm. Can I also say that's at the fault of no one? Because, you know, if you experience that, it's not your fault. We have this society which gears us up to tell us that we have to look a certain way at any cost. When I kind of uncovered this whole diet culture, that broke my heart because I experienced that growing up, you know, during 90s, 80s, through this, like this heroin chic and being skinny and the pressure that's put on girls, on women, and we carry this on. So, you know, I feel like it's not, if someone does that, it's not that there's nothing wrong with them. We're kind of just mirroring what we're being told. So, yeah, I just wanted to put that in there because I know, you know, sometimes when it comes to body image and how we can look, there's a lot of different ways that we can feel about ourselves there. And we're trying to do the right thing.
I think the pendulum has swung too far the other way because now I see girls my daughter's age, and my daughter's 24, you know, there's this, that age group has this whole body positivity thing. And I'm like, no. Being obese is not healthy. You don't try to make it okay. Like it doesn't make you, I'm not talking about like your value as a person if you're obese, but that's just as not okay as being heroin thin. They're both messed up. The mentality of both, it's not healthy, right? Your body doesn't have the capacity long-term to carry around two of you. Your heart doesn't have the capacity. Your vein, right? It is so incredibly hard. So getting people to understand, like, we're all built a little different. Like, mm-hmm. I came to a realization pretty young. I'm never going to be a small person because I'm just not a small person. I'm mm-hmm. a little over 5'10". I have a pretty muscular type structure. And I'm never going to look like some of my friends, you know, when I tell women now, like we'll be talking about weight and I'm like, well, I weigh more now than I ever have, but I'm also pretty happy with my body and how I look. I weigh 188 pounds. And they're like, what? Mm. I'm like, well, I lift heavy weights 3 to 4 times a week. I've been lifting for years. I have good solid muscle mass. Do I have more body fat than I used to have? I do. Mm. And I don't feel like I have an unhealthy amount of body fat. I just see that things are a little different. Mm. I don't want to fight with my body every day.
Yeah.
And so I'm great with exercise. I eat a very healthy diet and my body has just changed a little bit and that's okay. Right. I've just, instead of like fighting it, I've just learned to be like, okay, all that matters to me is being healthy and I want to look nice. I want to look appropriate for my, you know.
You want to feel good, I think. I think that's also that healthy at every size. It doesn't, you're right, bodies do come in all different shapes and sizes. Mm-hmm. But the difference here is, do you feel well in your body? Yeah. How's your bowel movements? Do you have a period? You know, like it's not just about the size, because you can be healthy at all different types of sizes. How are we feeling and are we feeling vital? So I think this is what you're kind of coming home is like, you know, you feel strong and yeah, your body's changed.
Yeah. It's not exactly the same, but that's okay. I look at a lot of women my age and I go, yeah, I feel like I'm doing all right. You know, I see women kind of like give up and they're like, yeah, I'm not, you know, or they're striving to look like they did when they were 16 or 17, which is also not realistic. So I think like understanding that your body is going to go through changes and it's not going to always look exactly the same. You can still be really healthy and feel great. Are there always things I'm working on? Sure. I mean, that's like,
you've got the wisdom to share as well, you know, because you've gone through this. So what's happening as we go through perimenopause? What What are the changes that we need to look out for when it comes to the body and, I guess, yeah, distribution?
I think that we have kind of multiple factors, right? So one of the things that I do see change with women as they're kind of moving through their 30s into their 40s is a lot of times people are more sedentary. They're not moving as much. And so they'll go, oh my gosh, I'm gaining weight. And I'm like, okay, talk to me about before you had kids or talk, right? And so kind of getting people to have that thought process of, shoot, I used to go to the gym and ride my bike, or I used to go to the gym and walk or whatever, and now I'm barely doing either. Well, you're going to see changes in your body then, right? Mm-hmm. So we kind of have an activity portion for a lot of people, not everyone, but a lot of people. And then we have hormonal changes, and included in those hormonal changes would be adrenal changes for a lot of women, right? And so you take stressed adrenals, stressed hormones that are really starting to kind of do this, and you're probably going to see some changes in your body composition because of all those factors. The other thing I see is as women really start moving pretty deep into perimenopause, as progesterone goes down, sleep, that's another factor, right? We know that when people don't sleep well, they typically consume an additional 30% in calories the following day. And that's just your body looking for energy. Again, your body trying to protect you, trying to help you. And so when you know those things, it can help you have an awareness around it instead of being like, what's wrong with me? Why do I want cookies so bad? Oh yeah, I slept really poorly last night. Okay, what can I do to support my energy production today? I'm a really big fan of women kind of before they hit perimenopause, like knowing how to support the adrenals, because once you're through menopause, you need those adrenals to be really robust and take over that hormone production that you lose with the ovaries atrophying. So from multiple points of view, having really healthy adrenals is valuable.
Yeah. Oh, I find this to be a bit of a, don't want to say trigger topic, sensitive topic maybe, because I feel of the nature of how we live and work, so many people's adrenals are just shot. We're already exhausted. I mean, as women especially, we take on a lot. We rarely ask for help. And you know, I hear burnout all the time, and burnout for me is synonymous with your adrenals being drained.
Absolutely. And I think it's just so, so common. I've done it to myself, and I'm acutely aware of how I feel in terms of my adrenals. And I am like, I take my adrenal in the morning. I have some at the office in case I'm feeling a little stressed, or I had a, you know, crummy night of sleep, or, you know, just don't feel the way I should. I'm really very cognizant of supporting my adrenal glands because I know the value of it. Right. Everyone's like, I'll get people that like when we're talking about hormones or adrenals, oh, more is better. No, just like everything, we need a certain balance and it's finding that sweet spot for you. You know, I have people occasionally that they don't have any symptoms of real stressed adrenals. Their labs don't show that they're stressed. And I'm like, look at you. you were built for this time, you know. Yeah. For a lot of us, I think our adrenals do really take a hit. And so knowing how to support them is really, really valuable. And I'm a big fan of easy things you can do. Like, let's say you're in your 30s, right? And you're like, maybe you have young kids and things aren't super crazy, but you don't quite feel like you used to. Maybe just do a little pinch of salt under your tongue in the morning and make sure you're taking vitamin C every day, because you need both of those things to make your adrenal hormones. And so that's just an easy little thing you can start with, right? You know, sometimes you got to get out bigger guns if the problems are a little bigger. Maybe you need some adrenal cortex. Maybe you need all three. I use all three, but that's just me. I also know
adrenal cortex being a supplement, like a supplement support. Yes. What's your take on adrenal cocktails?
I do use electrolytes every day, but I'm a sweater when I work out. I've struggled in the past when I was doing endurance sports. my potassium would get dangerously low. So I know I dump a lot of electrolytes when I'm sweating and working out.
And we need to be replenishing these to make sure that our adrenals are supported.
Yes.
And when our adrenals are shot, how is this showing up as excess weight gain for women?
A lot of times it's weight around the middle, right? Around the belly, where women will gain weight. The other ways that people are usually can kind of check in is often waking up and just being like, oh, if I could just lay here for 15 minutes, right? You don't, in the morning, the two things that wake you up are cortisol and blood sugar, and they both rise, and that's what wakes you up in the morning. If you don't have enough cortisol, you're not going to feel awake. The other thing I see is people will go, oh my God, after lunch, I can barely stay awake. You can also test and see where your cortisol levels are.
Yeah. Is it worthwhile getting a test to see how your cortisol is?
I will tell you this. On the labs that I do, I test morning and afternoon cortisol in the blood. And blood is the poorest way to check cortisol. I simply do it because it's easy and we can make sure cortisol's following the right pattern. So we need cortisol to spike in the morning and then do this slow, gentle decline to its lowest point. Like say around 9 a.m., it should reach its highest point. And then this beautiful, slow decline to its lowest point at 9 p.m. The blood test can tell you if that's happening the way it should. If someone's cortisol looks very off on a lab, I'll do an oral cortisol test. So you can either do a 4-point or a 5-point oral cortisol, where you're testing at 8, 12, 4, and 8. On the 5-point, you test again at midnight. And it's kind of telling you what's happening. You know, sometimes someone will get dysregulated cortisol. I'll give you an example. I just did labs on someone that works night shift. He's got an invert, like his is reversed, right? So super, super low in the morning and super high in the afternoon, because that's his sleep schedule. So it would make sense that that's what his cortisol is doing. And then getting him to understand, like, on your days off, you need to stay on your night working schedule, because that's so hard on your body. Flipping, you know?
Yeah, that change is, yeah, it's really difficult. Mm-hmm. I see that with nurses or anyone, you know, doctors, anyone who's doing these night shifts. Yeah, they struggle really with it, don't they?
Yeah, it's hard on the body, right? We were meant to be awake when it's light and asleep when it's dark. And so knowing that if you're going to work night shift, doing everything you can to really support your overall health, because we know in those situations, people typically do not live as long and they're not as healthy. It's very hard on the body.
Yeah. Work is a very hard one to kind of navigate, I feel, because everyone's got to do it. And I think sometimes when your health starts giving these red flags, red alarms, that's when we start to perhaps reflect on what we're doing and make the change. But it's not always easy.
Yes.
You know?
Mm. Well, this person was like, my mom was like, you need to quit and get a day job. But his job, he's got a great job. And he's like, I can't just run out and replace my job, which I get. Mm. And I said, that's okay. There are ways you can support your body through this if this is where you're going to choose to be. And that's okay if that's what you choose. You just want to really do everything you can to help your body feel aligned, right? Feel like it's okay and it's not super stressed because of this. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've met people that, like, oh, I worked night shift for years and they're super healthy. They just seem to be outliers that don't require as much sleep, or their body can just flip that schedule. Like, I'm the person, we just had our time change here. Night. I'm like, it's got to be 10 o'clock. And I'm like, oh, it's 6:30? Hard for me.
Yeah. And some people, you're right, some people can weather it well. Mm-hmm. But I guess for the women who kind of start to feel the change, mm-hmm. this is where, I guess, the wake up needs. But you also said that there's two things. There's your cortisol and then there's your blood sugar levels.
Yeah.
So insulin, I guess we would call it. And these are both hormones as well that are doing their dance in the morning. How important, like, how can we address, we understand that it's important to support our adrenals. Mm-hmm. And by the way, I love the tip about the salt and the vitamin C. Super easy to be able to do, just to support ourselves. When it comes to insulin, or balancing our blood sugar levels. Mm-hmm. How does this affect our weight, and how can we try to manage it? Because it's a big problem, insulin resistance. We're seeing this pop up everywhere.
I'm going to tell you, you can't manage what you don't measure. When I look at labs, I always get fasting insulin. It's rarely ever tested. Like, just most allopathic doctors aren't looking at it. And people, their insulin starts to climb way before their blood sugar starts to climb, right? Because the insulin's working harder and harder and harder to control the blood sugar. And then there's a breaking point where it can't. Mm-hmm. So if you test somebody's fasting insulin and it's 12 or 20 or, you know, some high number, you know they're starting to go off the rails, and their blood sugar may look okay right now. It's highly unlikely it will stay that way. So testing both of those so you really know what's happening in the body, it's really valuable information if you feel like things just aren't right. And so if you see that you're insulin resistant, I just put a post up about this yesterday. Most people are magnesium deficient, very magnesium deficient. If you don't have enough magnesium, you will become insulin resistant. Mm-hmm. So that's an easy one. Giving your body some magnesium to support it does a whole lot of wonderful things besides just support insulin sensitivity. Looking at your diet.
Just in regards to magnesium, mm-hmm. stress is also tanking magnesium, right? It's such a balance that yeah. is going on in our body. And no, it's such a fine line, and no wonder sometimes we feel just depleted and flat, because mm-hmm. one thing's affecting the other.
Many times there's just things we don't know what we don't know. And so I love forums like this where we can have a conversation and give people usable, valuable tips to help support their health.
Yes, I love that. When we think about sustainable weight loss, and I actually always called it getting to your feel-good weight, because it's not about weight loss. It's a feel-good weight that you want to get to. You want to get to a feel-good weight where you feel vital, where you got that sparkle back in your eye. And you know, it's especially when we go through perimenopause, to be able to take that with you.
I tell my middle-aged ladies a lot, they're like, I really want to weigh what I weigh when I got married, or when, you know, after when I was in college. And I'm like, okay, but your body has changed. How about this? How about you tell me what that weight is? And maybe they say 120. And I'm like, okay, why don't we kind of set 130 as a goal and then reassess as we get closer, right? Let's look at your body composition. How do you feel? How do you look? How do you feel in your clothes? The other thing, I used to hear my mom say this, and when I was young and obsessed with weighing myself, I didn't agree. I do now. She would always say, as women age, they probably look better 10 pounds overweight than 10 pounds underweight. And she's not wrong. You know, I think being reasonable and realistic about what our weight should be as we age, I try to encourage women to look at weighing themselves and be like, it's one tool. That's it. It's just a number. It's not good or bad. It's just a number that can help keep you accountable, right? Like, I can feel how my body feels and know how much I weigh.
And that's okay.
Yeah. But do I weigh myself sometimes? Yeah. Because I just want that accountability piece so that, you know, nothing ever goes off the rails. But, you know, if all your clothes are getting tight, you probably want to check in.
You know, one thing you just mentioned then, how people say, I want to look or feel how I was when I was in college or when I got married. I wonder how much of that is the emotional well-being. The experiences that we have in college and around the time, you know, if you're getting married or having big life celebrations or going traveling, I think we look back on these times as, wow, that was the best time of my life. When they say, like, I want to look that way, I wonder if there's like an element of emotion there, and perhaps what's changing then?
That's beautiful. I think there is a huge piece of our emotions and how we felt at a certain time tied to that.
Yeah. And then as we move on, there's things, you know, look at me, I'm going gray. There's things that we have to accept as our body naturally changes and transitions. And we touched on this really nicely in our last episode when we talked about aging gracefully, longevity, and our health span. When we come through perimenopause, you've talked about this before, ovaries not functioning less and less. They're atrophying. This is when our adrenals need to really kick in. We need to support our adrenals. Our adrenals are affecting our insulin, which is affecting our blood sugar levels, which is affecting things like our appetite and how much we eat. Yep. So it's a big party that's happening.
Yep.
So I guess if we can think about some actionable steps that we need to start doing, I guess in a sustainable and effective way, get to a feel-good weight as women. Yeah. Where should we start? What are the biggest bangs for our buck? I guess that's where I'd like to hit home on.
Lift weights. Do weight-bearing things, because the more muscle you have, the more calories you burn, the more metabolically active you are, and everything's just a little bit easier, right?
Yes.
That's an easy one. And then along with that, you have to have adequate protein. And if you're struggling to get enough, use an amino acid supplement, an essential amino acid, which is literally just the essential amino acids that make up protein. That is the easy bang for your buck, because when you start changing your body composition, everything gets easier, right? So for example, if we have a lot of adipose tissue, that produces estrogen. It's estrogenic. And so we end up often with being estrogen dominant. That affects our ability to lose weight. It affects all sorts of stuff. So there's so many factors. And if it feels complex, it's because it is complex. But if you want to just make it super simple for yourself, don't starve yourself. Eat real food. Eat food that you recognize what it is, right? Not highly processed. Move your body. Walk, lift weights, eat your protein, and get your sleep. And that's where it doesn't have to be overly complicated. Like just the basic foundational things for health, it's where the magic is for everything.
Yeah.
For all of it, right? We want like some, oh my gosh, I've got a cold plunge and then I'll lose weight. Nah, probably not.
There's a secret that someone else has that is hard, like something, a code that's hard to crack.
Yeah.
But it comes down to foundational basics.
Yep, absolutely.
And then just staying, doing them.
Yeah, absolutely.
And stick with them until you start to see change.
Yep.
Because you will.
And I try to remind people, you didn't get where you are right now overnight. You're not going to get out of it overnight. Mm-hmm. You have to have a marathon mentality, right? This is not a sprint.
Marathon mentality. Oh, yeah.
You know, kind of setting those right expectations. Like, this is a life thing. This isn't a, oh, I'm on a diet. I'm exercising to lose weight. What's going to happen when you stop exercising? What's going to happen when you go back to your old diet, right? Mm-hmm. It's the wheels are going to fall off. This is, you have to do things that are sustainable changes that you can keep doing. And you have to hold yourself accountable. Sometimes I hear people, you know, with excuses that I'm like, no, it's not your genes. You're not special in craving sugar in a way no one else does. You know what I mean? You have to be the adult and check in with yourself and go, no, I'm not going to do that because it doesn't align with my goals. And I'm not talking about perfection. I'm talking about progress. But, you know, these are pitfalls that I see. I'm confident I would have made it an excellent drill sergeant. Sometimes people need that, right? We live in this society where everyone wants to dance around everybody's feelings. And it's like, okay, well, dancing around their feelings got us into this society that's obese and so unhealthy. Like, our country is so sick, so sick. It's mind-boggling that we're one of the richest countries in the world, and yet our population is so incredibly sick. It's a telling sign for what's what's happening, right? So I think like holding yourself accountable and being like, yeah, I've made some really poor choices, but I also have the power to change that. I can make the decision to wake up every morning and do the right thing, the thing that's going to lead me towards health. Accountability is everything if you want to have a high quality life.
Yes. And a lot of these diseases that we're experiencing in the Western world, even, I think America is not unique in that fact. I see it in Australia. I see it in Germany. And anyone that actually adopts the Western diet and lifestyle, these diseases also come. They're lifestyle diseases.
Correct.
They're diseases that they're not contagious. You can't catch diabetes type 2. You can't catch high cholesterol.
Yep.
And that things can change just by having that inner drive to do so. And you're right. Sometimes you need that drill sergeant to be like, we're doing it and you're doing it.
Yeah. I had a lady on TikTok the other day. I was talking about blood sugar and, you know, that it is completely reversible. Like, and maybe you don't know that because your doctor's never told you, but it is fixable. And she went on a rant about how I didn't know what I was talking about. Her husband was thin and insulin resistant and type 2 diabetic. And I was like, well, there can be other factors for sure. And she's like, he doesn't have any of those other factors, but I know what I know. And you don't just become insulin resistant and type 2 diabetic, right? I had a very intelligent older woman that I know recently tell me that she's now on metformin because she just has bad genes. Her family gets diabetes. And I had to sit there and smile and bite my tongue.
But you can't. This is also the reason why I love podcasting. People come here to get the information and you have to meet them there because someone who's not ready for change also won't change.
Correct.
It's about getting, meeting them where they're at and inspiring change. I feel that that's exactly what you do. You walk, you're a role model, you lead by example, and you educate. And I think that type of work in the world is what we need more of. And I'm really grateful that you can come and share your knowledge on the podcast as well.
I'm happy to be able to.
And there's actually one thing that I wanted to talk about, which I think I saw it on a post that you had done. You called it workout snacking.
Oh,
I'd never heard of workout snacking before. Can you just go a bit in? Like, what is workout snacking and how can it support weight management?
Yeah, so there's been some clinical testing done around this, right? So we used to always think that exercise had to be done in these big chunks or it was just a waste of time. And when I was younger, I felt that way. I don't now. I've lived long enough to know that it's really just about moving your body, right? And so this study came out where they took people that were exercising. It's been a while since I read it, so forgive me if I'm not exactly right, but they took people that were working out for, I believe, around 45 minutes doing a workout. And then they took another group of people and they had them every hour, like while they were at work, do things like maybe 20 push-ups or 25 air squats or little things like that, right? Go walk around their building. I don't remember what all was included in the study, norm, but it was literally like these tiny, tiny little intervals of exercise. And guess who did better in the study?
The snackers.
Yes, the workout snackers. And I was like, that's freaking awesome because this takes away people's excuses.
Mm-hmm.
No, sorry. You don't have 30 seconds that you can do 10 push-ups by your desk or 10 squats or a minute of wall sits or something, because I get it, right? I know life's busy. I know when people have multiple kids and it can just be a lot. I get that. But where there is a will, there's a way.
Mm-hmm.
And so you figure out things that work for you. And it doesn't have to be these massive amounts of time that you give up to really make your health a priority and increase your overall health. If you want to be healthy, it doesn't take giving up or your life or turning your life upside down to make that happen. Mm-hmm. It's just these incremental little changes that are so valuable over time, right? Mm-hmm. If you alternate, like, let's say you go to work and every hour on the hour, you do either 10 push-ups or maybe 20 air squats, and you alternate and do that every hour while you're at work, I guarantee you in 6 months, your health is going to be in a very different place.
Yeah.
Fitness is also going to be in a very different place. And you didn't give up anything.
Yes. And I think that's so relevant because so many of us are sitting or have quite sedentary jobs. And you're right. Everyone has this 30 second. This is a nice way to kind of bring it in. Some of the key factors I've taken away from our conversation today is sedentary life is what's making us degenerate a little bit. Yeah. And adding muscle, you know, creating, having that strength. Mm-hmm. And I think this workout snacking is perhaps the key to allowing us to have this, to make that change, because you're right. Something as small as 1 minute of wall squats done over an extended period, like done over a couple of months, you feel the difference. So I love that exercise as well. When you start to do it, when you start to train anything, you start to feel the difference. Yeah. Until your body craves it at the end when you don't have it.
Absolutely. I'm in the middle of that right now because I'm in a walking boot, and that doesn't mean I get to walk. So, you know, like I'm a little limited what I can do in terms of leg exercises at the gym. I've been doing lots of wall sits because I can just get into a position and stay there. I don't need to hinge at my ankle and I'll hold it as long as I can. It's a workout. Mm-hmm. Doesn't seem like it would be. It's a workout.
Yeah.
So, you know, you don't have to have expensive equipment. You don't have to have a lot of time. It's really about deciding that you're going to make your health a priority and then holding yourself accountable.
Yeah. Excellent. Kimberly, thank you so much for your insights today. Thank you for being here. Thank you for inspiring. It's beautiful.
I've loved our conversations. It's been fun chatting with you. I've really enjoyed it.
If you enjoyed today's episode or any other episode, please feel free to leave a review or a rating. This makes the impact of the Health After 30 podcast grow and grow, and we're able to share information, inspire, and help women feel their best. And that is the whole purpose of this podcast, is to inspire change in women.
Thanks so much for being here. You could have been listening to anything, but you're here interested in reclaiming your health. I hope you found the episode useful and constructive. If you enjoyed it and would like to show support for the show, please leave a review, as this makes my content more discoverable for other people to enjoy and learn from. Please also consider subscribing to the show on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or wherever you enjoy listening. Finally, the best way to show support for the show is by sharing it with someone who you think might benefit from it. Thanks for listening. Be well, and I'll catch you next time.